Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday evening, January 30th, 2012. I'm your not-so-humble host, PK, welcoming you back here at bbsradio.com, Station 2. As I always pay homage to the suits in the office, thank you, gentlemen, for promoting free speech and free thought. And for me, I always promote the great ideals of Western democracy, which is the concept of free inquiry and debate. And I'm always an advocate for liberty, property, and peace. Tonight is a pre-recorded show, and I am happy to have back on Third Stream View my friend and mentor, Rick. Now, tomorrow, which will be the 31st, of course, this is pre-recorded, is the Florida primary, Republican primary, so I hope Ron Paul does well. I hope Dr. Paul does well. He won the debates as usual. Even the Rasmussen poll put him on top. And so everything is looking good. Even if Ron Paul comes in second or third, he's going to continue the fight. He's on the right track. He's right about Cuba, for example. You know, we can go to Vietnam, but we can't go to Cuba. We free Americans. So that is a... the hypocrisy of that, and the foreign policy towards Cuba, of course, is controlled by a lot of the South Florida Cuban population. But that is not a good thing because it's hindering trade. It's making things really, really worse. And I think my friend Rick is out there. Rick, are you out there, sir?
I'm out here.
Welcome back to Third Stream View. Would you care for some tea or coffee?
I'll take a tea, please.
Okay, well, that's good. It's self-service. Now, it's been a while since you've been back on. You're not only a friend of mine, but you're a mentor of mine, my first band leader on ships of any magnitude, and I've learned a lot from you, and I've carried on and in my struggling career as a musician. So welcome back again. I know it's been a while since you've been on, but things have happened. You've unloaded one of your properties. I know you're struggling in your musical situation, and you being born in the UK, anyway, interesting to have your take on things here in America and the economy and your outlook on things. You come from a conservative background. As far as I know, you've never been on the dole or this sort of thing. You're not a pro-welfare state mentality, but you see that things are tough and regular good folks like yourself need all the help they can get. Am I right?
Yeah, we do. I mean, it's... not good, is it, what's going on at the moment? Anyway.
No, and I'm curious. You know, Ron Paul and I, we've read a lot of the same books, so, you know, I'm on the same page as him about things. And for someone who's not as familiar with it, I know you've read some of this stuff. I was curious at the get-go, Ricky, what is your take on things? And if you had, I hate to use the word power, but if you could administrate things, do you have an idea how you would try to... fix the economy without making it plunge deeper into recession?
Well, I'm not an economist, that's for sure.
Right.
But, you know, one thing that I don't understand is this, you know, the fact that the government can just print money when they want. I mean, that's ridiculous. I actually had a little gathering last night. One of our musician friends here is getting out the playing side of the business and going into managing orchestras. And we were discussing a little bit about this between saying farewell to him. And, you know, the subject came up and if we sat around here tonight at a table printing money, we'd all be locked up and put in jail. But, you know, when the government just decide to, they just print it when they want. How does that make any sense? I mean, just,
because they're legalized counterfeiters and you're not.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it, when you think about it? You know, they can just do what they want, print money when they need it. You know, I wish we could. That'd be great.
Well,
it's ridiculous. I mean, actually, if there's no money, why should they be allowed to print it? That's ridiculous.
Actually, it wouldn't be great if we could all print it because you'd have inflation like you've never seen before. And here's a concept for you that the great Murray Rothbard, one of our Austrian School of Economics mentors, said. Let's say that everybody woke up tomorrow in the U.S., Rick, and everybody had all their wealth was doubled. Let's say all their bank accounts were doubled. Would they be any better off? Would they be richer?
Monetarily?
Yes.
Well, I don't know, because it depends on what everything else would cost, I guess.
Exactly. Thank you so much. If there is not a corresponding increase in goods and services, you've got twice as much money chasing the existing goods and services. Let's say that you had a band and you threw a concert and you sold 1,000 tickets. What if some deceitful person printed another 1,000 or 1,500 tickets? Then you'd have a higher demand, people all wanting the same. Then you'd have 2,500 people wanting the seats of 1,000 people. So it's an artificial creation in the supply of money. You didn't increase the seats for your concert, but the number of tickets was sold way beyond what you had planned. And if an outside party did this to you, that's fraud, and that's what the Federal Reserve does. However, it does cooperate with the Bank of England, thank you very much. They inflate together. There's much collusion together, as there are with other central banks. And when you find out, like Ron Paul has, the Federal Reserve bailing out this guy, this bank, this country, billions. And here are you just trying to get by and pay your bills.
Well, everybody.
And the elitists in the banking industry and government, they have the audacity to say, well, if we didn't step in and rescue these banks, things would be much better off. Excuse me. There would have been a temporary sharp recession. Big banks, many banks would have failed. Many businesses would have failed. But, Rick, by now, there would have been a good reorganization, more employment, and hopefully so much, and a new atmosphere of micro taxes and micro regulations. You and I don't want pollution, but we don't need thousands of rules and regulations that just clog the economy and make things worse and make it harder for regular people to have more jobs.
Yeah, I agree.
And the people, Rick, they blame the banks and the bankers. I get it. That's true. However, most people fail to go to the source, the Federal Reserve, where all these banks are tied into, and it sets policy. This is the problem. And as on my show, which I'm not afraid to back away on, and you've seen these criticisms on Occupy Wall Street and whatnot, they're talking about Jews. Well, it's not Jews that are behind it per se. These bankers are Zionist Jews, largely, and they are a very powerful clique. And to me, to say this is a reality. I'm not preaching hate. I am always having an expose on power. And see, here, I don't back down from that. So this clique has hurt a lot of their own people and other people and finances the war machine, which is causing so much death and suffering, a war machine that is sucking so much money out of our economy that we need for the private sector.
Yeah, I agree.
You should.
I mean, the banking situation is absolutely ridiculous. You know, I mean, if anybody, it's just total haves and have-nots. I mean, I think the whole we're getting closer to the fall of the Roman Empire every day.
Exactly, but here's the thing:
morally speaking, and everything else. And I'm no prude, but you know,
I think it's deliberate. I almost think it's deliberate.
Well, you know, you never know. I mean, look at, you got popularist shows that glorify basically street fighting and teen mums, you know, teens getting pregnant and living on the welfare state. It's all glorified. Everything is, you know, you never see anybody glorifying the next creator of some sort of, invention. They're
right.
Just sort of vilified. I mean, Apple computers are basically, oh, well, you better watch them because, you know, they're so big and powerful now. Everybody seems to be afraid of that, but they're not afraid of cheering on some moronic exercise, which
right.
you know, granted, 50 years ago would have been term moronic.
Right. Well, let's look.
You know, but now it's like.
True. Well, let's also look at power in the private sector. People, oh, you know, like Apple or computers or these big companies. Well, you know what? Those big companies, usually most of them, as far as more of a free market goes, most companies earn their wealth by people voting with their money for them. For example, that's why Carnival Cruise Lines is more successful than certain other companies, because they've made cruising available to the masses and people vote with their money. Nobody put their gun to a head and said, you have to take this company. But my point is that, like, let's say a big company, let's say Apple, they can't draft you. They can't declare war against other countries. They can't bomb other countries. People might say, well, the corporations control America. Well, if they control the government, still, the biggest corporation in America, Kara, cannot declare war on Iraq or send troops. So you have to go to the source. Again, it's the governmental power. And the federal government...
The whole thing is... Yeah, I mean, but that whole area is just very gray and very... You know,
yes.
I mean, look, what is it now? What are these super PACs, whatever they're called?
Right.
You know, what a corrupt... Well, it's open to corruption anyway. If you, if somebody wants to shove a load of money into the non-profit arm of the super PAC, they never have to disclose. You could have the mob putting money in. You could have anybody putting money in. It doesn't
right.
have to be disclosed. And then all the politician says, I'm not aware of who's putting the money in. It's like, oh, really? Okay. And then they're turning around saying they want everything to be open and exposed, where transparency's got to be in there and all that. And it's just a load of rhetoric. And everybody sits like sheep. I mean, I think we should all start growing wool on our bodies, because everybody sits there. And exactly, and takes it. You know, and because it's on the TV and they said so, well, it must be true.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely right about that. However, I have a slightly different take on things. And I sometimes, I don't clash, but I have some disagreement with other fellow libertarians. But in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, I do not care how much money anybody or any business gives to any politicians. I only want absolutely full disclosure of who gave what. So then you know.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
So if
this super PAC thing is not happening, that's not what's happening.
Exactly. So that, again, that poisons the well. A pure well would have complete disclosure. Okay, so-and-so gave $2 million. Ricky gave $2 million to Romney or Gingrich. Okay, we know.
Right.
Yes, so you're definitely right about that. Now, what is your – here's a good one for you. Your take as an Englishman, what is your take when you look at Ron Paul? And you've heard him speak a lot.
Well, I like it. He seems to make a lot of sense. I don't think he's – I like what he says. I don't know that I like the way he says it. He's not the most charismatic fella up there. And I think if he had more joie de vivre, more charisma, he would probably even get more interest than he's garnering. But – you know, unfortunately, in my opinion, the networks don't give him his fair due. They never talk about it. They talk about him as least as possible.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's deliberate. They don't like him.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. You know, they bring him in when they have to. You know, they don't. I don't think they support him at all.
You know,
I don't think they give an unbiased. View of the race at all, and then again they focus in on who's winning the race at the time, don't they? So they're going to, you know, it's Newt and didn't Monty Python have a sketch about Newt?
I hope so.
On that in the Holy Grail something.
Yeah, bad Newt, you bad Newt. Yeah, well,
something
this
about
Newt
the trees
is...
and the shrubbery and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, well, but they don't give him his fair due. So when I like what he says.
Well, it's also – thank you. It's also deliberate. They deliberately want to marginalize him and ignore him. It's much harder this time around. However, and you probably know this, when he goes to college campuses where there's kids your son's age, he is a rock star. He's the oldest candidate with the largest younger following, and no one can deny, unless they're a complete idiot, that the young people are the future of any nation.
Right.
So what do they know? What do kids your son's age know? They know that they've been saddled with this debt and this war after war after war, a shrinking job market and a huge mess. And a lot of these kids who formerly supported Obama, they're not going to support him this time around.
Well, they're a little more savvy, aren't they?
Yes.
You know, they tend not to believe what they're told. It has to be proven. And now they've got the internet and they're wizards on it. You know, they can get the truth in nanoseconds.
Right.
And, you know, they give them the opportunity to make up their own minds much more than when you're just told by grown-ups what to believe.
Exactly.
And
thank goodness for the internet. Yes, there's some BS on there, too, and you can sift through that. But now governments can't hide the truth as much as they did in the past because, information travels too quickly. And they want to be able to shut the internet down. That's what they're working towards.
Oh, yeah, they're trying.
They'll use – and the excuses, of course, they will always use are terrorism, child porn, anything like that. Instead of just punishing the individuals responsible, they want a cloak. It's all for our protection.
Yeah,
you know,
very true.
That's how I see it. So, and the other thing about Ron Paul is I think it's gotten easier for him, and he does it more, and he mixes it in more. But do you realize how strong he is when he up there always stands alone and condemns the foreign policy and the wars?
Oh, yeah.
He alone does that. No one else.
Yeah.
They're nibbling at him whenever they can use some of his ideas, but he alone talks about it. And he always talks about, besides, you know, cutting taxes in this mess, you got to deal with the Federal Reserve. It's their free money machine. Not for you and me, though. Not that we need it, but it's for the elite crowd.
That's right.
And this banking thing goes way back because the Rothschilds, they got their tentacles deeply into Britain and France. And there's a very powerful elite structure between the British banking system and the American system. Behind the scenes, there are very powerful people doing these things and not in our interest. And we can't let nationalism and waving the flag get in our way because the people of England are much different than the government of England, just like the people of America and the American government are two different things.
Right.
You know, so, but I see this year maybe being worse than last year. And Obama's, and that's another thing about Ron Paul. He's not constantly harping on Obama. I just talk about Obama's policies. They're awful. How can you spend more and ask for more debt when you have massive debt already? I challenge anyone to run their family budget. Say they have their family budget, and then they spend 1,000% more than they take in every year. Plus, they borrow money. How long can any individual or family business or business survive like that without a reckoning day? And you're noticing some of the higher prices now, I would think, and not just petrol, but, you know, in the shops.
Oh, yeah.
And one thing, important thing about our School of Economics, Rick, is that we understand that prices do not all rise uniformly. So keep that in mind. You'll see price increases, but they don't rise, you know, if there's 2% inflation, everything doesn't automatically rise, you know, 2%. So how are companies cutting back? Besides shaving off their labor force a bit, some of their products are smaller in quantity, because they're trying not to raise higher prices. So inflation is a very destructive thing. It's been with us in the world for centuries. People know better, but they think the government is a quick fix, paper money. You know, so Britain went off the gold standard in 31, the U.S. went off in 33, and in the U.S., when the U.S. went off the gold standard, it wasn't a perfect gold standard, it was still better than anything, you know, without it, and hundreds of economists screamed, don't do it, don't go off the gold standard, and now people who don't know better, you hear people, they put down the gold standard. Ron Paul wants these archaic policies. Well, really? Well, when those archaic policies were in effect, there was much lower inflation, and we didn't have as much of the mess that we're in today.
Yeah, today's pretty awful, really. But it's the, and also on top of the policy, well, I think, I honestly think that, okay, Obama's policies, right, for example, I don't see the difference. I could be in there. I don't think it matters because you got Congress arguing amongst themselves, doing absolutely nothing between them. It seems, you know, it's so left and right, and I don't mean that politically, but just the, you know, black and white.
Right.
So polar opposites of people, and they don't want to compromise because they're all trying to get their own angle in. And it's almost like, you know, what sacrifices is the state of the nation and the people in the nation so they can have their fun. And when they've had their big arguments, they go off and have a nice dinner on taxpayers' money and enjoy a nice, probably French wine. And there you go. Then they go back the next day and nothing gets done again. And it's just a dead end, isn't it? The road.
Yes. And, you know, they have fat, they have fat, lavish pensions. But here's another angle. Here's another angle to take on it. Actually, a lot of us think that gridlock is a good thing because that way they're not legislating more. They're not spewing out more orders and regulations and taxes. But in this case of gridlock, Republicans tend to be a little more honest about business. But there is hardly any difference between the parties, especially foreign policy. The only way they differ, basically, is on how much to spend. They're pretty much the same, and that's how the globalists, that's how the elite wants us. That's how they want it. So the range of debate is very little. They want a real narrow area, say between say Hillary Clinton and Mitt Romney. You know, and anybody who's outside of that zone, oh, you're a kook or a crank. Here's a good one for you. A lot of people say, and remember this question I'm going to show you, give you. A lot of people like to say, well, I like Ron Paul except his foreign policy. You know, I like him. So my question to the people who oppose Ron Paul or dislike Ron Paul because of his foreign policy and his view on the wars, here's the question that puts their back against the wall. You say, okay, well, I'm just curious. For those of you who dislike or oppose Ron Paul because of his foreign policy, what do you have to say to the growing number of veterans and active duty military who enthusiastically support Ron Paul? Would you call them kooks? Would you call them nutty? Would you call them unpatriotic? And that is like a vice. They either need to answer the question, or if they start calling names and coming up with other things that don't pertain to the question, it proves my point.
Well, then that's what they do all the time. All these politicians, you get asked a question, and they cleverly turn it to something they want to talk about. And unfortunately, most of the questions are left unanswered.
Yes, you're right. Can I give you?
They start off like they're going to answer the question, and then they'll say one word which takes them off on a tangent to what they want to talk about.
Exactly.
Come off like, well, that's not really the problem, but you know, the fact that the unemployment, and they go on to come from something completely different. And then the question, there was a woman the other day, I was watching this debate. This woman asked a question. She said, I've found myself out of work and I cannot afford to buy health insurance. What can you do? And nobody really said how she's going to get out of the problem, you know?
Well, Ron Paul. Ron Paul, being a doctor, has his type of solutions, the medical savings accounts, and he supports Medicare and Medicaid for now. He would like to see it changed and privatized, but he doesn't want to throw people out in the street. So if you ever hear anybody putting him down, he'd cut people off of Social Security and Medicare. That's not true, just for your own information.
Right.
But there's market ways we can solve this problem. But we, like Ron Paul says, Rick, we can't do it without this, with this massive trillion-dollar overseas spending every year. You know, this global empire, the world's policeman. I would contend that Britain did a better job as the world's the world's policeman at the peak of their empire. Although the empire was very expensive to Britain and also bankrupting, like the two wars especially did. But I thought you lot did a better way of administrating things. And as I understand it, when Britain went to India or other countries, like say, let's say 19th century, they didn't intervene too much with the affairs of the people's customs and whatnot. The British helped administer And of course, I reject all the brutality of colonialism and all this sort of thing. But as far as organizing markets and trade and a civil service that generally was quite honest, as I understand it, that, you know, that aspect of it was good. But American in this nation building and all this intervening, that's so resented.
Well, it is, because they don't take any responsibility for what they do.
Exactly.
From my point of view, I mean, it just looks like, you know, going back, if you look at the history of the British Empire, at least there was a, a mood or a, you know, to, as you say, make things, you know, right, based on trade, based on services.
Rational administration.
Building infrastructure.
Right.
And yes, I mean, not saying it's right to start going over to other people's countries and basically telling them how to run their affairs, and also, obviously, all the stuff that went on in those days was absolutely horrible, but it seems like they had a responsibility to look after it.
I think,
you know,
so,
for example,
and I see the difference.
Indians held British passports for...
Yes.
Yeah, they could just come in when they want. They were part of the Commonwealth, part of the Empire, so they were British subjects.
Right. So, and then U.S. is not only is it not supposed to be the world's policeman, it is not in our Constitution. It is not the duty of the federal government to have over 1,000 bases in over 130 foreign countries. This is bankrupting us. It's causing resentment. Yeah. And Rick Santorum, these people, they lie. They hate us because we're free. Because I mean, that's Bush's first BS. Rubbish. They hate us because we're free. I was laughing at that. You know, I before 9/11, I used to say, Uncle Sam's been bombing Iraq for 10 years.
Right.
There's no fly zones, this embargo. Oh, they can thump their chest and think the embargo is great. It caused the death of probably 500,000 Iraqis and lots of children. And now they want to attack Iran? Rick, these people are crazy.
Yeah, they are.
There's no need to attack Iran. Even if Iran had one nuke, so what? It's not going to. There's no way Iran would want to attack Israel. And that's a lie, too. That's BS. Iran has no interest in attacking Israel. Israel has 200 to 300 nukes, and they allow no inspections, by the way. Israel could vaporize that country, you know, within 10 minutes.
Oh,
And there are at least 25,000 Persian, that is Iranian Jews, living in Iran. They are not being persecuted, nor are they trying to get the hell out of the country.
Right.
And here's another one for you, Rick. Despite the neoconservative Zionist talk radio and the national news media, Ahmadinejad did not say he wanted to wipe Israel off the map. What he did say, and even anti-Zionist Jews that I've read, clearly acknowledge this. What Ahmadinejad did say was something to the effect of, just like the former Soviet Union, he wants to see the Zionist regime vanish from the pages of history. Now, that is much different than saying he wants to wipe Israel off the map.
Right.
And I stand with the anti-Zionist Jews, and there is a group of them, especially Jews United Against Zionism. When you study what they have to say and you read what they have to say, and they acknowledge that, even in their religion, that there is not supposed to be a homeland for the Jews until the Messiah comes back. They're opposed to Israel as it stands, and they deplore what's happened to their Arab neighbors, and this has been a reaction against that. So, you know, and that's why I like to talk about it on this show. You won't hear this hardly on the national media. They'd call me anti-Semitic. Well, have I advocated hatred towards anyone? Have I advocated taking the rights? Have I ever advocated taking any Jewish person's civil rights or human rights away? No. But this, again, is an expose on power, and we can't have that because I'm supposed to conform to the standard view.
No, exactly.
You know,
think he's coming back?
Say what?
You think he's coming back?
The Savior?
Yes, the Messiah. Do you think he's on his way back?
No, and also a lot of Christian Zionists, see, these Christian Zionists are the very pro-Israel crowd, and they've been schmoozed by Reverend John Hagee and Pat Robertson. We got to support Israel. We got to support Israel. Meanwhile, most people don't even realize, these Christian Zionists, that Zionism is largely atheistic, and that most Jewish people are either they're either secular and or agnostic and or atheistic. They practice their religion as a tradition. And a lot of these Christian Zionists, I don't know if you've ever heard about this or know about this, they want to bring on a war sooner in the Middle East because they think in this way Jesus will come back sooner. So bombing the hell out of people and starting more wars, I don't understand how that is the Christian way to do things.
Because it's just hypocritical, isn't it, a lot of it?
Say what?
I said because it's hypocritical, a lot of it.
Oh, very hypocritical. And you know, they're very anti-abortion, but they don't mind blowing the hell out of other people in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and...
And I was talking to somebody about a Christian film, and the ruling was no... nothing sexual, no profanity, no alcohol if the character's been saved, but when it came to killing people, you could kill as many people as you want.
Yep. Well, that's the mentality we're up against. Of course, you know, we live in the Bible Belt, so you see a lot of that. And a lot of good soldiers come from the South, because after the Civil War, the federal government, when they took over, you know, they put a lot of bases in the South. So a lot of these Southerners, their former ancestors were murdered by the federal government, yet now they're really patriotic, gung-ho soldiers. So, of course, every country, you know, we need our soldiers. We need a military. And it just so happens that rednecks and shit kickers make good soldiers. Shit kickers being farmers and ranchers. That crowd, there's a lot of Southerners in the military. Hence, you have a very pro-military in the South, and that's why Ron Paul doesn't receive as warm a reception. That's why Sean, I listen to talk radio just so I can think in my mind how I would deal with these people. Sean Hannity always promotes these concerts. And he often has country rock music stars at these. And this panders to the South. It panders to this audience. That's how I see it.
Well, I think you're right. Actually, Ron Paul is doing better than he was doing better in, you know, than he's ever done, right?
True. People are waking up to it, especially the veterans. Yep. You know, people are starting to understand the foreign policy, because you have to realize that, you know, history and geography are the lost subjects in America. And, of course, war is God's way of teaching Americans geography.
Yeah. That's why they should all be into the world's game of football, soccer, to you Americans.
Well, I've become a big fan of
geography
it.
Geography, too.
I become a big fan of it, and it sickens me to hear these quote-unquote macho U.S. newscasters or sportscasters putting down soccer, you know, football. It'll never be big in this country, you know, like as if they think that, you know, it's a sport that they can marginalize when it's huge outside of this country. And what I like to say is, you don't have to be big to play soccer. You got to be good.
Yeah, and it's growing. It will take over eventually.
Well, your kids' generation and the young—you know—the young kids all play it, Rick. And what I've noticed, my friends' kids who are 5, 6, 7, 8—it's kind of neat. A lot of the teams they play on have boys and girls on the same team. I'm not advocating that for the top professional teams, but you know, there's not a lot of injuries, and they play together. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, it is good.
I got a question for you, Rick. I have a question for you. How long have you lived in the U.S. now, pretty much? About 25 years?
Yeah,
give or take?
Yeah.
So, what is your take on it, having been here this long now? What are the cultural observations you've noticed? Speak freely, my friend. I'm not going to wet my pants over criticism. If you can't criticize yourself, Rick, we're both musicians. If we can't criticize ourselves, if we can't criticize our playing or take obstructive criticism from others, then you know we should be able to take it as an individual or a resident of a particular country too. So, what is your take on thing, warts and all, in the U.S.?
Well, my take on thing. Well, first of all, I never ever thought the streets were paved in gold, and they certainly aren't. I do think there are ways to, get ahead. The so-called American dream. I think it's a lot of it is
hype.
You know, almost like it's hype. It's like a selling thing. I don't understand all this stuff about the health issue and the healthcare. I think it's sort of wacky, really. I didn't talk about this Obamacare. I don't even know what it is. I just pay my health insurance like whether Obama's in or George Bush was in. I'm still paying health insurance, and it didn't change for me. And, of course, if I'm in England, the ambulance will come and pick you up, take the hospital, and good night. That's it. You don't start paying a bill or have to worry about health insurance. If you want to buy it privately, you can. So I don't quite understand how that side of this country evolved the way it did. And everybody says, oh, your care's not as good. Well, that's really not true. I mean, I've been in both, and I guess it's about the same. Now, if you get up to the very, very specialized stuff, maybe it is better here. I don't know. But, you know, the centers in England are, a lot of them are superb. Do you have to wait to go? Not really. My dad's 90 years old now, and he's just had a lot of tests done for all sorts of stuff. He had blood in the urine, filled a bottle full. He had to go for this test, that test, that test, this test. And, you know, to a person that age, no cost. So I don't get that side of this thing here.
Well, let me comment on that. First of all, whenever I'm in England, and I love England, I've been there 12 times. It's one of my favorite countries. I like to look at, of course, I like British newspapers, and I look at them, and I always see sometimes frequent and sometimes heavy criticism of the NHS. And as I understand it, in England or Britain, in most countries with socialized health care, if you have an emergency, you're going to get through. But if you need elective surgery or other things, you know, there's often a queue, and that's sort of unheard of here. Our system needs reform, but I don't want government control of it. I don't want the same government who dropped nuclear bombs on Japan, who invaded Iraq and Afghanistan, and now who wants to attack Iran to provide us with health care. Oh, maybe at the very minimum if it was at the state level. And for the poor people and those who can't afford it, like Ron Paul would suggest, and usually for everybody, we'd rather give them a voucher for medical savings accounts. And if you don't use it, that money continues to grow. And if you're out of work, you can pay your insurance premium out of that. We also need tort reform. I don't think England has this, although
what
I think
is
it's – wait, excuse
what
me. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's growing is that the lawyers are getting bigger in your country too, because here we have these ridiculous settlements. And I don't know if you knew this, Rick, but lawyers tend to follow where doctors are. Because they prey on them, you know. And, of course, malpractice is a bad thing. But if somebody's injured, I mean, you know, wouldn't $2 or $3 million help the person instead of $40 million here or $50 million here, Rick, where the lawyers are going to get at least a third?
Yeah.
And look at this cost of tragedy. Okay, it's a tragedy. We feel for the people, okay? Those people are entitled to compensation, but should the lawyers get over 30% of their take? Let's say there's a $100 million payout, and clearly the company was at fault. But should the lawyers get a third of that, or 33% of that? That's ridiculous.
Now, was it the company at fault, or was it that stupid, egotistical captain that decided to, go off course?
Good question. But however, cost is going to bear the brunt of it.
Oh, well,
you cannot. You cannot control all of your employees. A person cannot control all their children if they're somewhere, and if one of their kids gets in a bad accident. You know what I'm saying? So cost is going to bear the brunt, of course. But the thing that bothers me always is I see the lawyers salivating. But do they deserve that kind of a revenue? What have they had to do to – are they Rick, how hard in this case would it be to prove negligence?
Right.
Rick, it's pretty clear cut, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't we want to see the money go to the people who were harmed?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I would say for those damn – and I don't believe in price controls otherwise. But, you know, if the lawyers only got 5 or 10%, you know, I could live with that. But it's just this rapacious mentality. And then another thing, back to the healthcare in the system, it got very corporate. They got involved in things. And here, the government mandated what insurance has to provide. So it does all this stuff. It mucks up the system. That's with an M, by the way. And it clogs things, and it makes it less efficient. Then people blame capitalism when actually it's statism or mercantilism. Which is how I see it. But healthcare.
Yeah, and again, but it's all, you know, it's also about, well, I don't know what it's about. What can you do? You know, I don't know how, what, in England after the war, within 1 year, anybody could go to the hospital and get cared for.
Right.
And of course, the system's abused. And of course, a lot of cases aren't run very well, and that's the ones that always get the headlines.
Oh, of course.
But, you know, when they've, you know, they live, for example, 6 miles away from one of the most advanced cancer centers in Europe. And you just go along there, and whatever you need to happen, happens. You know, and what you said about elective surgery, the other side of it is, if you want to pay for it, you can. If you want to go privately and say, I want to jump ahead of that queue, I don't want to wait, well, you can pay for it if you want. And you can also buy insurance for that, too. You can have private insurance. It's not like you cannot have your own insurance policy and make your own choices. But very rarely do people bother because you do get, you know, covered. So, and then, so they say, well, you know, it all comes out taxes and all that. From, you know, my perspective on the tax bracket, it's not that much higher. You know, so then they say, well, then they say, well, it's what is it, you know, it's socialism, blah, 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 and everything else, and that would never happen in America. And then you turn around and people who have got 8 kids are on welfare. You know, it's the same thing. And if anybody ever said, you know, like they do in China, you're allowed one child, and that's if you know you can't have any more, people would be in absolute uproar. But how can, you know, they keep how can you keep, you know, keep paying out money to these people who don't work and just have kids and live on welfare?
Well, here's the thing.
I mean, there's so much. I mean, it's all very. There's so much going on. I mean, there's obviously no easy answers, is there? I mean, it's just whichever way you look at it, you know, there's problems.
Interesting you mentioned China, because, and I'm pro-China. I realize that this is China's century. I don't crawl under a rock. I'm not a word about China. It's China's century. Now, they're going to have their own problems, too, with inflation. I probably see some of that on the horizon. And this one-child policy is hurting them in the long run because it's caused an imbalance between males and females as far as, you know, the population, you know, available females and da-da-da-da-da. So, you know, they're going to have their own problems. But as Ron Paul says, China's acting more capitalistically than the U.S. They're not sending their military everywhere. They're not bombing people. They're cutting deals. They're buying land in Africa. You know, they don't want to persecute Iran. They need oil from Iran. You know, so I'm you know. And here's the other thing, Rick. Iran is not my enemy. Iraq was not my enemy. Afghanistan was not my enemy. I guess individual terrorists are.
You know, I've always held the opinion that whatever, you know, if any of these politicians had to go to war and fight themselves, there wouldn't be any wars.
Exactly. Or put
all
their
those
children...
people who sit in Washington had to go and fight and raise an army, there wouldn't be any wars.
Put their children on the front line first.
Yeah, there'd be nothing. It wouldn't happen, would it?
No, and that's why I love this. There's an old saying, I've heard it's been attributed to the British, but whoever wrote it, whoever said it, I love it. And that is, don't believe anything until it's officially denied. I love that one. You know, that's a good one. Now, Britain has cut back on their Navy. I sent you that article earlier last year about, you know, the size and the fact that there's trade-offs. You know, mom and dad need their Social Security. Now, do we need a Navy that's that big when we're not really threatened? Yes, we need a Navy, but how big do things have to be?
Right.
Here, the U.S. is spending more than all the other countries combined for defense. You know, we're strong and powerful, but it's so over the top that it's hurting our economy.
I know. Now, having said that, when you've got that many people employed by that machine, when you cut back, where do those jobs go?
Well, what would happen would be, especially if they had done it over time like Clinton was starting to do, you would have the private sector steadily absorb those other jobs as the markets would open up and more investment would flow in. And America's not that I don't know that people want to invest here that much anymore. It should have a very welcoming investment, situation with low taxes and low regulations. And that's what this country needs. And like Ron Paul says, why are these businesses taxed again to bring the money back into the country? It's ridiculous. I do not want to tax people more. I don't like the military industrial complex crowd who's, you know, the greed is overwhelming. And here's the thing, though, Rick. They're all getting their revenue from the tax trough. They're not earning it out in the marketplace.
Right.
So it's like a guaranteed revenue from the taxpayer. Yeah, they got to get their government contracts, you know. So with a rational, sane defense system, our troops would be staffing more of the bases in this country. Even during the 90s, I was saying, why are they closing the domestic bases and expanding the foreign ones? I would take all the troops home from the foreign bases. And for example, let England have our former bases and staff it with your own soldiers,
right.
And then the local community would still benefit from purchasing of the military. And it, like in Japan or South Korea, they'd put their own military in our former bases. We would save billions, trillions. We would come home to defend our country, and we wouldn't be putting a stick in the eye of these other people throughout the world who don't like it. And I understand why they don't like it. And I'm pro-defense. The Constitution calls for a military. We get that. But it doesn't call for a global empire. That's already been done. Britain did it. They did a better job. Those days are gone. We're not supposed to have an empire, and we're broke.
Right. We are.
We're broke, and these rich bastards on TV, the neoconservatives and the military-industrial complex and the politicians, again, with their lavish pensions, they want more war. Well, they'll retire as millionaires and wealthy, and it's your kids and poor whites, although we might be joining that term someday, but it's poor whites, Latins, and black folks who are fighting these wars.
Right.
They pay them jack peanuts, and you look at all the thousands coming home with terrible injuries and disabilities. It's just awful. And you're going to, you know, and meanwhile, I don't know if you knew this, but military suicides are at an all-time high, as are military. As our military spousal abuse and divorce. And I've written this stuff when I've debated a few people on Facebook, and they always ignore that aspect. You know, I said, what about that? Well, we got to do what we got to, you know. But it's been sanitized, Rick, because during the Vietnam War, you would see it every – because I was in grade school and high school. That war raged through most of my grade school and high school days. And every night on TV, though, national news, you would see the body counts of dead GIs, of Viet Cong, of civilians. They would usually show that. Now they don't.
Yeah. No, I know, because it's been censored.
But you see the tragedy of it all when you see these adverts for wounded veterans with their limbs gone and they have these prosthetics and stuff. I can't even watch it. Right. It's so sad.
No, it's just horrible.
And a lot of these, and sad to say, a lot of these gung-ho people who went up and enlisted after 9/11 or this and that, the real pro-military crowd, they don't understand history. They don't understand the cultures of any of these countries. You know, they can't see beyond the flag and apple pie and Chevrolet. And they're the ones that are brunt of most of this, you know. So it's not about being unpatriotic. It's about having a clue about what's going on and what you're fighting for. Because you told me back during Desert Storm 1, the first one, you said, and these are great words, you said, you don't know who you're fighting for anymore.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, what is it? What exactly is this all about? You know, and it doesn't come out till later in history. They don't put all the facts out there, and, you know, history is written by the winners, so then you find things out later on. You say, oh, well, that's why they're pissed off.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it's all
that. Yeah. So, and this year I'm thinking could be worse. Now, if Obama gets reelected, I mean, what are his policies going to be? More of the same? More spending?
But if he gets reelected, what does it matter what his policies are? Because nobody's going to agree to him anyway.
Here's the difference between you and Obama. I think that you've read an economics book or two.
Well, a long time ago, maybe.
Well, yeah, but you would not advocate those policies.
No, but what my point is, I mean, I don't see how whatever he, I mean, unless the Democrats get the House and the Congress. You know, whatever it is up there, how anything he says, he's going to get blocked, and it'll be much easier. 4 years of the same.
How would he change things? That you're right. That's a good one. That's a good comment. And Ron Paul, the same has been said about Ron Paul. But this is what I think Ron Paul would do. You know, they say the president has a bully pulpit. I believe that Ron Paul would go to the people and tell them the truth. He would say, "Look, folks, Congress doesn't want to do this. This is what needs to be done. Congress won't do it. Are you with me? Then you tell your congressman that you want this legislation repealed, probably repealed more than passed. This is what we need." But, you know, this is the three categories I wanted to tell you about Rick. Is, for example, would you consider Ron Paul to be a politician?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would. I mean, just by nature of what he's doing, he's a politician. But I think he's a politician with a populist agenda. I don't think he's a politician to be a politician. You know what I'm saying? He's in that field, he's in that theater, but he's doing it, I feel as though he's doing it because he wants to put things right as opposed to being the president.
Correct. That's why I sort of categorize it like this. He is a politician, but more importantly, he is a statesman. He is not a statist. All his opponents are statists. Obama's a statist. Right. You know, Reagan, Bush, they're all statists. Ron Paul is a statesman. He comes from his community. He represents his people, and he doesn't want a growing, huge national government. He stands for the Constitution. So a statesman would support the Constitution and limited government. And that's where he's different than practically everybody else in office, although they're starting to wake up because they don't want to ignore him, because the Ron Paul wing of the Republican Party, we're here to stay. And we're going to, you know, we're going to put the hammer down whenever we can. So that is what I see as the difference.
Well, I think you're right.
I mean, I usually am.
Well, sometimes. Most times. yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I'm saying. You know, he's what he wants to do, I think, is meaningful, and it's not coming from this. I don't think it's coming from a yearning for power.
It isn't.
And I do think, I mean, why else would all these people want to, you know, that they just. It's sort of alarming when you hear what people have got to say in these debates sometimes, when they actually get around to debating and start arguing like little kids. And that was a joy of watching Ron Paul the other night, too. You know, he basically said, "I'm really not interested in all that. Let's talk about what we need to talk about."
That was great. He wanted to send politicians to the moon.
Hey?
I don't hear that thing about, you know, they want to revive the space program, and Ron Paul said, I'd rather send a lot of politicians to the moon.
Right, that was, yeah, very funny.
But I've noticed lately that he's become more, not so much an attack dog, but stronger, just laying down these positions
he's
and laying down his policies. I wish he would have done it, you know, months ago, but he's doing it now, and I'm seeing more strength. And, you know, what does it take when I don't know if you know this, but you know he is a doctor. In Congress, he was often referred to as Dr. No, because quite often it was 434-1.
Really?
And I would wear that as a badge of honor, because he's got no baggage, Rick. He's been married to the same woman all these years. No drugs.
No baggage at all. They can't get him on anything, can they?
Exactly.
They
no
can't
drugs.
Get him on changing his, you know, there's none of this change in his mind 5 years later. Or
exactly. You know. It is so laughable to see the Romney videos where I will definitely stand for a woman's right to choose. I mean, I'm pro-choice with no tax funding, but to hear him flip-flop, it's just amazing, you know, because he wants to be president. He's got money. And what I like to say about Romney is his father was a better man. His father was a much better man. His father was a Republican governor of Michigan. And when he went to Vietnam for have a look around in, I don't know, 67, 68, he came back opposing the war. And he was Republican. There's this mindset, oh, if you're Republican, you got to be pro-war and you got to be really pro-Israel. Right. You know. But back to my show here, Third Stream View, wouldn't it be something if this could show had some national and we could have these kind of discussions for the, you know, what we talk about here is not what they want on the corporate statist Zionist media.
Well, maybe you need to go to Ron Paul's organization and see if you can't get some of his lieutenants in and talk to them.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
You know, because the higher up the totem pole you go, then you're going to get more recognition and, you know, maybe get into different markets.
Yeah.
Is your band going to play for his conventions anytime soon?
Well, not that I know of, but possibly in August. But I'll tell you what, if he gets the nomination, I want to play at the White House. I'll even foot the bill just to go up there and play at the inaugural. I mean, that would be wonderful.
It would, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely. You know, so but he's got a lot of power. See, and they're afraid he might run third party, which I don't think he will, because if he runs third party,
I don't think he will either.
Well, here's the thing.
The other night, I thought Newt was trying to sort of agree with him and pull him on, because I think Newt's trying to get his endorsement.
It'll never happen. Newt is awful. He's the classic insider that he portrays himself not to be.
I know.
And the thing is, Ron Paul, okay, they don't want him to run as third party, because then, you know, Obama would certainly win. And then they will also persecute and hurt his son's future chances. They will go against his son as a payback. I would just say that up front. Well, another reason I'm not going to run third party is because you will persecute my son. I would be upfront about all that. However, Ron Paul does not have to run as a third party. He does not. Let's check this out. There's no way he needs to run as a third party. He can merely say, I endorse the Libertarian Party candidate.
Right.
Because mark my words, and I'm telling my Republican friends this, if Ron Paul doesn't get the nomination, Obama's going to win. It might be a tight race, but Romney or Gingrich cannot beat Obama. Actually, Ron Paul is the only one who can beat Obama, but the neocons and those oppose him say that he wouldn't have a chance against Obama. Actually, Ron Paul is the only one who can beat Obama. So here it is, Rick. Whether or not Ron Paul runs as a third party, it doesn't matter, because Obama's going to win if it's Gingrich or Romney or Santorum. You know, there's no way that it might be close, but, you know, those guys are pathetic. And
I agree, Rick, with you.
You should. All the dirt and the debates that's come up between each other, well, guess who's going to use that against them all?
Oh, of course.
Rick, if I was Obama, I would thank Romney for being the architect of my Obamacare.
Right.
He'll never live that one down.
No, I know.
You know, so...
No, I didn't think either of them stand much of a chance, actually.
No, there you have it. So, and as I like to say, you know, therefore I am the logical successor to Ron Paul.
Well, again, I think you've got to start fighting in bigger arenas.
Yeah, I need to do that. I hope to take it to that level. But I am also very glad that you liked my secession solution.
I thought that was great. I think that needs publicizing.
When I first started my show in like November 2010, I went over that every show I went over. It took me about two or three shows to go through the whole thing. And I was glad that you liked it. I think it worked for any country. Do you think that would work for England, Britain, that solution, the way it's laid out?
Well, yeah, I don't see why not. But
it doesn't take anything away from anyone.
Right.
It doesn't take their rights away. Yes, it would change the medical system, but it would do it gradually. There's no way we want to throw anybody out on the streets. But I'm glad that you liked it.
Yeah, it was very good. Very thought-provoking.
Yeah, let's put it this way. We wouldn't be in the situation that we are now. And all of my friends who have read it, like, they answered the last – there's only one question at the bottom. It says, if you could stay with the way things are now, or if you could just step into this society as I laid it out, what would you choose? And they all choose my system.
When I say my,
I wrote it, but you can see all the way through it. I'm standing on the shoulders of giants.
Right.
My mentors. I'm not trying to, you know, take the country.
Have you tried to get it publicized? Have you tried to get it published?
I'm going to give it to some sites that are for peaceful secession and this sort of thing. But, you know, the Democrats especially, they think states' rights is secession. You want to reinstate slavery. So now I say, yeah, I want to reinstate slavery. That's what it's all about. I laugh at those clowns. But anyway, we've run out of time here, and I want to thank you for coming back. I hope you'll come back sooner in the near future, because it's fun to talk to you, and it's great to get a take on it from someone who was not initially from this country.
Well, it's a pleasure to do it. You know, it's sort of fun.
Yeah,
I don't know if I can give you much insight, but it's good to hear your rant.
Thank you. Well, it's good to hear your take on things, and it's good to – I like to try to explain a few things to you, what you might have been a little unclear about or uncertain about the economy and this and that, because it gives you a little more to work with based on my background and stuff. It gives you some thoughts, keeping in mind, Rick, that it's – people blame the banks, but look at the source. Where does this originate, you know? So,
yep.
And with that, I'm going to sign off, and I'm going to thank you so much, my friend Rick, for coming back on to Third Stream View, which will be on bbsradio.com this Monday evening, January 30th at 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern. So until next time, my friends, this is your humble host, PK, saying good night, and thank you for listening to Third Stream View.